Hello, and welcome to episode 13 of Post Game SideQuest Patreon podcast, all about hot takes on cold games. I'm Melissa. I use she, her pronouns. I am SideQuest editor-in-chief.
I'm Nassim. I use they, them pronouns, and I am the managing editor.
And I'm Zora. I also use they, them pronouns. I am the assistant editor and copy ogre.
And today we are talking about what we're playing, Tabletop Edition, because we play tabletop games too, believe it or not. You probably believe that. I don't think that's that much of a shocker.
I think this might even be established lore of our 13 episode Patreon exclusive podcast.
This is the deep lore. Play tabletop games. So yeah, we're just going to kind of talk a little bit about what we've been playing recently, because I think we talk more about video games than we do tabletop games, but tabletop games deserve attention too. That's the hot take for today. I hope you're ready for more searing hot takes. Who wants to go first? Should I go first because I have three?
Yes.
Perhaps. I should certainly not.
Okay, we won't make Zora go first.
I have one, so you should probably go first.
Oh, okay. Well, I've been playing D&D 5e I've been playing this particular game for about a year. I don't know. What's time anymore? Maybe a year and a half. And I was GMing. And I have been playing games I've been running adventures out of Rolled and Told Volume 1, which is published by Lionforge. Which are like a series of not one shots if you play with me or my group.
I think that every single person who has put one shot on a game is just a big fat liar. One exception. For the Queen is a single sitting game. That is the only game I've ever played in a single sitting consistently.
Yeah, there's a lot of fucking around in our group. I don't know about everybody else's
group. Are one shots if you don't like the people you're playing with.
Yeah, okay, yeah. I could see that.
If it's strangers at a convention who you don't have a vested interest in spending time with already, perhaps perhaps one might run them in one go. However, if you have any interest in elaborating, okay, I'll get off the soapbox. I've never played a one shot. It doesn't work.
Yeah, so I've been kind of picking ones out of Rolled and Told to begin with that I've been running. So like I'm not going to whip the book out right now because it's big and it's going to take time and require me to move objects, and I don't want to do that. But there's one in there that the first one that we played together was the Thunderlock Bar Crawl, which is sort of a bar has built a dungeon underneath that's sort of almost like an escape room for testing low-level parties. So you get grouped together with, you know, some strangers, or maybe you know a couple of them, whatever. And then you run through this dungeon and you get a prize if you finish it, basically. We did that one first, and then we did one with a magical school, like a fairy school that had been whisked away to the fairy realm or something. I can't remember exactly. And then we did one that was a murder mystery, except all of the players were like, actually, fuck the mystery portion of this. We're just going to go in and wreak havoc. They solved nothing, but they did finish the campaign. They spent zero effort in terms of investigation. They did at one point. So when we were doing the Thunderlock Bar Crawl, it's supposed to be for levels 1 to 3. Uh-huh. And they were all level 1. And let me tell you, they almost died about 7 times. Like,
oh no.
Complete party wipe. Almost like so often, to the point that finally I'm just like, you know what? I'm going to play a character and he's going to be a himbo cleric.
Oh, this is the origin of this character.
Yes, this is the origin of my himbo cleric. His name is Hawthorne. He is good at healing and nothing else. He is utter himbo. And I created him for the sole purpose of keeping this party alive. and I enjoy him a lot. But the reason I brought him up was because during the murder mystery party, the most dangerous part was it's a food mystery. It happens at like a dinner party, and oh, okay.
Spoiler, what does that mean?
Spoilers for this adventure in Rolled and Told. The food has been enchanted to kill the participants in this dinner party. And so one of the enemies is a cheese dip of smothering.
Amazing.
One of the people was killed by being smothered by cheese dip, and one of the player characters told Hawthorne, "I dare you to eat that."
Oh no.
He did, and then he almost died. So they almost lost their healer to a cheese dip of smothering.
Oh no. So
after that one, I actually ran the adventure that's included with Fairy Fire, which is a 5e supplement by Astrolago Press, which is so extremely my shit because the players get whisked away to a fairy ball to celebrate the birthday of this of the monarch, who is the ruler of this section of the fairy world. And another mild spoiler for Fairy Fire, it's a time loop, so you have to solve who is trying to kill the monarch by, you know, in this like 4-hour ball that mm-hmm. repeats itself until you solve it, which was very fun. But now it's time for me to take a break.
Wait, so I have a question, actually.
Yes.
And this might go for both of you, but I think, Nassim, you're not going to talk about like a traditional like tabletop role-playing game. You're going to talk about a tabletop game.
Yes.
That perhaps you play a role in. Anyway, so this is a thing that I've wondered. I started playing tabletop role-playing games with D&D when I was maybe 13. And while I love those friends who I played with, it was kind of a miserable experience. Mm-hmm. We played D&D, we played, you know, out of the box adventures pre-written. Again, super love those friends, but the experience was not what I wanted out of tabletop role-playing games. Mm-hmm. And then eventually I tried to run D&D because I was like, maybe I'll have more fun running the games. And I also tried to use a pre-written adventure. Similarly, miserable. So I guess my question is, and it wasn't necessarily because the adventures were bad. They were like Wizards of the Coast adventures, so they weren't astoundingly good, but sure. They weren't like offensively terrible or like super poorly constructed. But since then, like, my tabletop identity is very much one that exists in games that don't have pre-written adventures, like, and they're designed to be systems that don't require you to prep a ton. So what do you get out of the pre-written adventures for D&D, and how do they, like, enhance your play? Because obviously they do for a lot of people. I've never had that experience, and so I've been, especially in the last couple of years where D&D has come back, and I've just been assuming that people were off the dome DMing. But that's not true. So I'm wondering how?
So I have only played one official, like, by mm-hmm. Wizards of the Coast campaign, and I did not make it all the way through for a variety of reasons. And that is the, I can't remember what it's called. It's the one that comes with the starter kit, which if you have listened to the Adventure Zone is the one that they play about 2/3 before they start tweaking and making it their own.
Okay.
It was fine. Like, it wasn't bad or anything. It just, it was a little more serious mm-hmm. and a little more mechanical, I think.
Okay.
Than I liked. Now, playing these ones from Rolled and Told, and especially the ones from Astrolago, which I think are just, like, incredible. They're really cool. They're usually a bit more humorous. They're a bit mm-hmm. more lighthearted, and they're a bit more freeform.
Okay.
So like the Thunderlock bar crawl is definitely the one that's the most linear, because, you know, it's an escape room, essentially. You have to like progress through things in order. And that one's a little stricter with the rules. Like, you're supposed to finish it in a certain amount of time, not real time, but
right, in game time.
In game time. God, because you're supposed to finish it in 60 minutes. No.
LOL.
Not even. It took us probably like 4 sessions. So, if not more. But I have tried to write my own campaign before. And what happens is I get so fucking caught up in the details in anticipating mm-hmm. every single thing that I think the players might do, which is impossible, by
yeah.
the way.
Yeah.
It is impossible. There is no accounting for what players are going to do. But I get so caught up in that I never finish. And I think what works for me as a DM is considering very deeply the characters and the narrative arcs that would be satisfying for the players. So I'll usually talk to the players about like, mm-hmm. What would you see as a good ending for this character? I'm not writing the ending now, but think about that. What kind of growth do you want to see for this character? What would satisfy you as an ending? And then I will kind of choose elements from these different campaigns and like structure events to kind of lead them toward that path eventually. Okay. That means that I don't have to do so much building myself, and instead I do most of that through characters. So I'll tweak, you know, if there's an NPC in a game who I think would fit this role really well, then we will lean into that NPC, and I might tweak them a bit to make them fit the narrative arc for a character better. Okay. Trying to think of an example. So one of my players has a character who is like a fresh-faced, nervous adventurer. And his player kind of wants almost this, not like super bad boy arc, but he wants him to be a little more like
incredible.
To get a little bit of an edge and to have, and he
have that innocence beaten out of him just a tad.
Yeah.
Like
so,
a pleasing amount.
So, and the way that we chose to go about this is to have him be tutored by a character from the fairy realm who studies all of these very like weird magics. Like, she turned herself into a, maybe she was a badger, but now she's a badger. I don't remember. Anyway, her name is the Blister Beast. But she is going to tutor him in magic, but specifically in tattoo magic. So he's going from this fresh-faced adventurer into like this heavily tattooed artist who also does magic with tattoos.
That's extremely sick.
I love that.
What happens when you run out of canvas?
I don't know. We'll have to find out.
Oh, shit.
And so I've talked to all of the players about like, where do you see the character going? And then I just kind of mold the adventures into something that is going to help satisfy that. Like, we have another character who is kind of your standard asshole mercenary, and so this is spoilers to any of my players who might be listening to this. Please close your ears, because I think this is a very good arc and I don't want to spoil it too much. But one of the things that the player has realized is that she doesn't actually like playing these really aggressive, forceful characters as much as she thought she would. So mm-hmm. she wants an arc that is going to soften him up a bit. And so we planned this together, a character from her character's past coming back and hurting him because this character knows him well enough to cause a wound that is going to cause lasting damage. And the next arc we're going into, which is witchcraft or House of Plenty in the Astrolago witchcraft book, which is all about domestic magic, building community, art, and creating magic that way. We're essentially going to injure her character to the point where he has no choice but to not be aggressive for a while, and he's going to have to learn crafting instead.
Incredible.
So that's going to take away this fundamental method of engagement for this character and force him to do something different. So that's the kind of thing that I do as a GM, is I try to focus on character journeys. and telling a satisfying narrative with the mechanics of these different adventures.
So that sounds a lot like each, so D&D is this, it's an enormous system, right? It's huge, and it's designed to sort of work for anything, which means it of course works for nothing particularly well.
Sure.
But it sounds like these, especially these non-Wizards of the Coast adventures, have kind of the character of a lot of the indie RPGs that I play, where like, so Stewpot by Takuma Kata is one of my favorite little indie games. It's still in development, but you can get it on their itch, which is, I think, noroadhome.itch.io or itch.io/noroadhome, however that works.
We can put it in the show notes.
And Stewpot is about a party of adventurers after they retire and them sort of like gaining the new identity.
Oh, I love that. I want to...
Stewpot like, rules.
That makes me want to like put it... So there's a few different systems that I want to incorporate. Sorry to interrupt.
No, go ahead.
There's a few different systems that I want to incorporate at different times throughout the game. Like I have one I can't remember the name of, but it's a fairy themed... Because one of the characters has like a history of making a very bad fairy bargain.
I see.
So I want to incorporate this game that is specifically about bad fairy bargains into part of her character journey. And Stewpot sounds like just like an incredible way to end a long campaign.
Yes. Yeah. But like, you know, so Stewpot is very, very small. Stewpot is a game that's it's meant to be. It's very flexible. It can be a one-shot and actually a one-shot because it's built on mini games. It's what is typically like colloquially called a party game in the TTRPG space, where it's a game where you create characters and then you sort of guide them through different mini games, which are story game type, like one pagers or half pagers, where you respond to prompts and maybe flip a coin or roll some dice. And it sort of moves the story along in a specific way. So in Stewpot, one might be, cause it's all, if it's all very domestic, is like somebody comes to town and comes to your inn. Cause in Stewpot, you run an inn. And you have to give them a good meal. And that's the mini game, is like your cast of characters, like coming together to try and feed this person in a way that makes them happy.
I love this.
And it's very brief and very, very straightforward. I don't know where I was going with this, but I love Stewpot a lot. Anyway, so Stewpot is a very small game. I think it's very directed. It has the same vibe as like one of these adventures to me that you're talking about. But also if you look at like Dungeon World or a lot of Powered by the Apocalypse systems, their mechanics sort of guide you into different types of stories. So Monster Hearts is very dramatic and very emphasis. It has a lot of emphasis on dialogue. A lot of the moves have to do with people's reaction to what your character has done or said rather than dealing damage. And so it sounds like these adventures that you find in supplemental D&D material kind of push D&D's mechanics in specific directions by emphasizing some of them or fleshing them out so that you can tell a story that isn't just like, and then the stalagmite monster came and now you have to kill it before you go down the stairs. How's that going to go?
Yeah, I think the Astrologo Press ones in particular do this like really incredible job of playing with D&D's mechanics in really interesting ways. Witchcraft in particular, that one, they have their own system for how domestic magic works, and it basically ties magic into a unique crafting system. So you have like different tiers of crafts that you create. The crafting itself is part of a quest. Like you have like, you may have to go on a quest to get certain materials, etc. And the campaign within Witchcraft is that one or more of the party members ends up with a inherited stake in this dilapidated mansion that exists in
Oh my god.
And they have to repair the mansion as well as form bonds with the community and aid in different...
Holy shit. You need to read Stewpot.
Yeah, it sounds really good. We haven't started running House of Plenty yet, but like, and I think I talked about this in my article that I wrote about how to break D&D for fun. Like, witchcraft is D&D, but it's so different from like the expectation of D&D that mm-hmm. I actually, before we were going to get into that arc, I'm like, hey, I just want to let everybody know that when we get to this arc, it is not based on combat. And I want to warn you about that so that nobody's going to be frustrated by the fact that like if you start attacking people, there are going to be negative consequences. So just know going into this space yeah. that like we're going to be engaging with the game differently. And, you know, if that doesn't sound fun, let me know and we'll do something different. But I don't want to punish you for engaging with D&D the way that D&D wants you to engage with it. So, and luckily everybody was on board with this, with this new direction. So, that I put this in our outline, but, sometimes I like have to be reminded that people do play D&D like very strictly with the rules.
Yeah.
Like trying to be good at it. Now we have one of our players is running a side campaign that I'm playing in rather than DMing. And I play this character who is a bratty prince or lord named Abby, who is designed specifically to suck at everything. I designed him to be bad because that's what's fun for me. And we're playing, I can't remember the name of the campaign. I think it is a Wizards of the Coast adventure, but it's like about a haunted pirate ship.
Sick.
Yeah, it's pretty sick. And we spent an entire session, like several hours, not advancing the plot whatsoever. Most of the time was spent on drinking games, and also my character having an existential crisis and then going to every other member of the party and also causing an existential crisis in them. I forget sometimes that that is not actually how people play D&D. There are no rules in D&D for existential crisis. But that's what's fun to me about it, is kind of the things that take place between the actual rule sections. Like, mm-hmm. we all had a great time not advancing the story. It was super fun. It was exhausting, because I'm not used to carrying the load of conversation. Usually I just let, because like if I'm DMing, which I usually am, yeah. I've actually played D&D very little. I just kind of let the players do their thing and I just pop in when necessary. So I was not used to that, but it was so much fun to have this like this all this strange dialogue and these like experiences in between like the game. And this happened in our most recent time playing also, where we were having, you know, we were fighting some ghost rats or whatever. And one of our, you know, there's like five people playing. So seven people playing, actually. Let me count correctly.
That's too many. That's so many people. What's happening? How do you schedule?
It's difficult. We have a GM and then we have six players. Yep. So, you know, not everybody's paying the utmost attention at all times, right? And my character is such that I have built him to essentially be like, he wants recognition for something other than being, you know, part of the nobility. So we're having this fight, and again, I've designed my character to be bad, yet he was hitting everything, and he was like the only person hitting anything. And my friend, who's, you know, playing, wasn't paying attention, and she's like, so nobody's hit anything yet? And I was like, no, I killed the rat. And then she's like, well, I didn't see it. So now it's a running joke for this character that he never gets recognition for anything, even though he was like not entirely carrying that fight, but like a significant portion of the damage dealt to that fight was his, but nobody saw him do it. But everybody's looking when he screws up. And all of that comes about not from the mechanics, but from playing with other people. Like, that's yeah. all that's all people driven. And that's like, that for me is my favorite part of D&D, is not the, okay, now roll your D20 to see if you hit.
Yeah.
You know, now roll your D10 to see if you do damage. It's the things that happen as a consequence or in between those mechanical moments.
I feel like I should say that when I talk about the mechanics of other games, like pushing stories in certain directions, like that also all comes from the people playing the game, but the mm-hmm. game, the mechanics of the game itself encourage that storytelling or specific types of storytelling.
Yeah. I think there's often nuance missing from this conversation about what D&D encourages versus what mm-hmm. Other tabletop RPGs encourage. I think that, like, and again, I wrote about this in the How to Break D&D for Fun article. I think for me, the crunchiness and like the complexity of the rules in D&D actually are really satisfying, because I love to find loopholes and I love mm-hmm. to play against the grain. That's not fun for everybody, and for other people, you know, a different system they would probably have more fun with. In the same way that a lot of people really love the game Fiasco, and that game was like too free for me.
Yeah,
it was, that game went off the rails so fucking fast. And not in the way that is like it's designed for. So I like the restrictions. I find them very fun, but they are not right for everybody, especially if, you know, you're a person who really abides by the rules. And I don't mean that in like a negative way. Some people just really like to play with the rules, and that's not me. I'm a big fan of just like, well, let's just not do that one. But yeah, I find it very fun to play within this like very restrictive space. And I forget sometimes that other people, other games are run quite differently, where people really are just like trying to make a good character to be really good mm-hmm. at hitting the dragon with the sword. Whereas I'm like, my shitty bard knows 5 spells and they're all to get out of people's bedrooms.
Incredible. Wow. Okay. So I can segue pretty directly into Apocalypse World from this if you want me to. But Nassim, if you want a chance to speak.
Well, mostly I'm, you know, one, just like listening as somebody who doesn't have a lot of tabletop experience, but who's always been really interested in tabletop experience, I'm like, this sounds very ideal, like a lot of fun. And how do I do this? But I was going to ask earlier, so these games, I guess, like, you know, in my very like limited experience, how do you, when you say like, Missy, when you say that you're gearing stories towards like characters' developmental growth, does that happen like at the table? Is it like you having, you know, this like whatever, this NPC is having this heart to heart with one of the characters? I'm just like trying to figure out like, how does that actually play out like at the table if it's just supposed to be between like a couple individuals?
I think I get it. I will usually ask out of character, usually just like in conversation or by text or whatever. You know, where do you want this character to go? Or I'll say, you know, at the end of a session, everybody like take some time to think about where you would like your character to go and get back to me whenever you have something. And again, this isn't something that's going to happen right away, but, you know, start thinking about what a satisfying ending would look like for your character. Now, of course, there is always the possibility that this character will die and not reach the satisfying ending. But if I can set up the story in such a way as we're going on the right, like we're going on a direction that will be satisfying, then, I mean, worst case scenario, your character dies and you end up with like a really tragic and like, you know, like not fulfilling, obviously, because if you cut a story off before mm-hmm. it's done, then that is itself not really fulfilling. But like a tragic story can still be an enjoyable story.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So I'll usually talk about that out of character. And then once I get a sense of like where the player wants their character to go, I start tweaking the direction or like the established adventure or whatever to suit that. That way the players are having some degree of agency in the direction of the story, even if they don't know it yet. Because like they don't know the changes that I've made. They don't know that I orchestrated a specific encounter to play out a certain way with the permission of a player. To get the satisfying character beat, right? They don't know that.
So it's like incremental then, like you're thinking about kind of changes in a long term. Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's because RPGs are telling a story with your friends. And so it's
right.
Character development in well-written media typically doesn't happen at the drop of a hat. It happens over a series of decisions, and often there's like a decision that like really symbolizes the turn. But it's you know, human development, personal development is a process, not a switch flipping. And so it's engineering a story that will allow that process to happen.
Yeah. Okay. So when it comes to like a character needing to have, you know, a one-on-one discussion with an NPC or that kind of thing, then I will usually pull, you know, we'll play that out, whether the player wants to have that discussion as like in front of the group or separate from the group. I usually give them that option. Like, do you want this to take place in front of everybody, or do you want it to take place separate? Do you want it to take place in front of everybody, but none of the other characters know what's going on? Like, we usually play that out together to find out like what the player wants, what they want other people to know, which will help kind of shape the character direction later on. Basically, like, yeah, what Zora said, you know, I take tabletop RPGs as telling a story with my friends.
Yeah.
It just so happens that the rules I use to tell the story are complex and involve a lot of dice rolling. In other systems, that's not quite as true.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of the systems I play do involve a lot of dice rolling, but they're not, they don't include, they're one book, not eight.
Right. Yeah. They're not
three at minimum.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
Plus your adventure, plus your supplement. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I've got 6 books total. The 3 main D&D books, the Dungeon Master's Guide, Player's Handbook, and the Monster Manual.
Yep.
Yeah. And then I've got the Rolled and Told book and then the 2 Astrologo Press books. And like I said, again, in that How to Break D&D article, the ones I use most often are the Astrologo Press books and Rolled and Told. And then the Player's Handbook, because that one's got all the spells in it.
Yep.
And I will never remember how to cast a spell. I don't play casters.
I think a lot of...
I say with a cleric and a
bard. Clerics are really easy, though, compared to other spellcasters. Clerics are like... Have you prayed? Great. So my thing with D&D is that I when I play games, when I do everything, I want to know everything. I want to understand the situation in which I am operating as best as I possibly can. And I want to know what everyone else knows, and I want all of us to be operating on the same amount of information under the same, like, knowing the same rules. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily obeying all of them, but like, we need to know what we're doing and how we're operating. And with D&D, there's so much information that I will never understand all of it. And nobody who I play games with anymore, like my friend Jordan, memorized the Player's Handbook and the GM's Guide. And so when I was playing D&D with him, I could just be like, hey, Jordan, what's the answer to this? And he would know. But I can't do that if I don't have like a living encyclopedia sitting next to me.
Yeah, I'm lucky that, so I have the books, right? We also play augmented heavily, whether we're playing in person or virtually, we play with Roll20, which has a lot of the information in it. And then I also have Nola, who writes for SideQuest, who knows a hell of a lot more about tabletop RPGs than I do.
Right.
And they are able to just be like, it goes like this. It goes like this.
As the case may be, either way, D&D is like a game that requires a lot of information to be known by, at the very least, the GM and hopefully one or two players, because it helps to carry that cognitive load. And it's simply too much cognitive load for me to operate under comfortably. I prefer games like Monster Hearts or like Stew Pot, where it's one book, I can read the book once and sort of get the gist of the game, and then I only have to learn a couple moves to like understand what the vibe is and then operate acceptably. I agree that Fiasco is too free. I don't enjoy playing Fiasco very much because it doesn't give me enough to work with.
Yeah. I love the premise.
But D&D gives me too much.
there is definitely a middle ground between Fiasco and D&D. Side note, Nassim, I would be happy to run D&D for you someday. If you want to try it.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's, and I'll like talk about this when I talk about like why Gloomhaven as a game appeals to me. It's just like, there is so much activation energy for tabletop games, and I'm so interested. Like, it's I like, my entire life, I think if my dad had played D&D in college, I probably would have grown up like much more comfortable with it. But I didn't have nerd friends until, well, everyone at UChicago is a nerd, but like, I didn't have like true nerd friends until I started at UNR, with the exception of Gabe, my husband. And you know, like the first time I really played any sort of, I don't even know if you would really call them one shots, because I think Zora's rule of you don't like the people you're playing with are like for my like particular instance, like, fits it really well. But my husband, like, he's played so many tabletop games, and before we started dating, he was playing, like, running his own campaigns on Roll20 a lot, and he hates D&D. I mean, like, he has very, very angry feelings towards D&D and thinks it's, like, super limiting. So I just have like no experience, and then I have a husband who's just like, no, this very traditional like game, like, he's like, no, I won't play with you, like, I hate this game. Like, well, okay. Like, my, you know, the one person that maybe I could like find something to play with.
I think so, you could just play Dungeon World.
No, well, that's what we do, right? Like, so the few things I've played, like, Gabe has run some Dungeon World I don't even want to call them campaigns, like a game. And I think once he and I did, it's very hard to do with, like, you know, ostensibly a GM and ostensibly a single player, but I think he did one Torchbearer, like, thing with me. But no, Dungeon World is, like, that's his preferred. Like, he's just like, ah, yes, like, you have, your character creation takes maybe half an hour or something, and then we can just put a story together. But he pulls stuff up on the spot, and I'm like, I don't know how, like, I don't think this is how it, running a game usually works, but I don't know anything. So
that is in games that I play, that is how it works. Often people I play with have like a sketch of a world or a concept, but it's that sketch of a world or a concept is based on, so in the game traditions that I engage with, there's a concept of a session zero where everybody comes together and like comes with their character concepts, not necessarily like a character sheet, but a concept, and we all sit around and we create our characters together, and we have a conversation about what we want the story to look like. And so, using that information, so it's questions like what do we want this to be rated, right? Like PG-13, R, etc. What do we want to deal with? In my Monster Hearts campaign, I wanted to deal with like, kind of the idea of self-hatred and failure, because I'm fun at parties. But also, Monster Hearts is a game that's meant to be about high schoolers. And I can't think of two things that scared me more as a high schooler than the idea of failure and the self-hatred imbued therein. Like, those are very teen, like, things. I mean, they're also adult things, but like they were like, what's a word for spicy that is more olfactory? Because I can't think of the word that I wanted. But it was like, they were like in focus in my high school years in a way that their focus has changed as I've grown. And so that's what I wanted to deal with that character. Another person played, a Sasquatch, I think, is actually what the class was called, which is a character that deals with like fading into the background. They're not noticed. They're a little bit wild, right? This idea of being an outsider, and not being seen. And so we came up with these characters, and we had conversations about like what we wanted to deal with the characters. And using that information, Mike, our GM, sort of sketched out some antagonists. And then sort of threw them at us. And when I say sketched out some antagonists, I mean Mike went, you know, I bet a shitty racist substitute teacher would cause some chaos in this group. And boy, did she. And so it's like really loose sketching of concepts. And sort of, we're people. And we're pretty creative people, like me and my friends. Even though none of us are novelists in any way, but we're able to work with each other and encourage each other's ideas in such a way that a story builds. And I think that it's something that a lot of people can do, but it takes practice to not necessarily to do it, but to be comfortable being seen doing it. Does that make sense?
That makes a lot of sense. Sorry, go ahead.
It's hard. Oh, I was just going to say, it's hard to get over that bridge of volunteering a creative idea, which, again, for me is something that is, I actually find is facilitated really well by D&D's rules, because the amount of roles it takes to accomplish something like hitting somebody with a sword, there's a lot of it goes in two directions, right? On the one hand, you can just base it off the role. Okay, you hit him with the sword, whatever. Mm-hmm. That's not interesting. But the space that's opened up by potential failure, and even like great successes, for me, when I was first starting to play tabletop RPGs, which was 3.5 in college, that the prompt of a dice roll helped me loosen up a bit. Because it gave me something to work with. Whereas if I was just, now I've played story games before, that don't have any like roles whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And I struggle with that. I struggle with having to volunteer or play or act without something forcing me to do it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I clam right up.
The beauty of like role-based systems, I guess, chance-based systems, is that all you have to do is swing the sword. What happens after is externally determined. It's determined by the roll of the die. And depending on how the die rolls, it's then the outcome is determined either by the player or the GM. And so it takes some of the cognitive load off of the player. And then for the GM, the players responding to the prompts that they give takes the narrative load off the GM, right? Because they can just be like, okay, there's a bad guy. What do you do? And then it's in the player's hands.
And it's fun to see how different interpretations happen. Like I'm playing Pathfinder as well, which I am not running. And we actually played yesterday, and during our session yesterday, my character in Pathfinder is, a baker who has lost her bakery. She is a half-orc, and she's also a barbarian who basically goes into fugue states. She doesn't want to fight. She's a baker. She's not a warrior. So when she has to attack, or do damage in some way, she goes into a rage, which then she has to reconcile with herself when she's done. And so during yesterday's session, she was the initiator. Well, she wasn't the initiator of the contact. I just rolled the highest initiative, which meant that I had the first turn, even though I was actively trying to stop the combat. And so I had my character, essentially warn one of the enemies, like she hit him. And then she's like, get out now and it won't happen again. Just leave. Just, you don't have to fight us. And the GM responded by him moving away. And I was like, oh, great. Success. I did it. I've avoided combat. Yay for me. No, it turned out he didn't want to get hit by her anymore. So he went and picked on somebody else, which naturally was what kicked my character into rage.
Yeah.
And then she just fucked shit up. So I like the ability, and this could happen in any kind of tabletop RPG, not just Pathfinder, not just D&D, but the ability of the GM to respond in unexpected ways, just by virtue of having a human storyteller.
Nassim, you should tell us about Gloomhaven and how
tell us
how it interacts with this conversation, because I have never played or even attempted to learn about Gloomhaven other than editing a couple pieces.
Gloomhaven is interesting. Gloomhaven, like the concept is basically like an RPG in a box. It's a legacy game where there's basically pre-boxed characters of like a particular class.
For, for, and you, people who don't know anything about games, what is a legacy game?
A legacy game is a game in which you're not meant to replay it. You play it once, and as you're playing it, you physically change the game. So you're
and you play it over many sessions.
And you play it over many sessions. Yeah. So the idea is, like, this game is so long that you. Well, I guess the idea is the game is so long that you don't feel the need to replay it. You've told like a really satisfying story at the end of it. And then you have, I guess, like items that have stood the test of the game. So like a game, like a map game board that has stickers on it that have shown like where you've gone. So So the original Gloomhaven, and then I'll talk about the expansion that we're playing. The original Gloomhaven, you pick up a box that has a character class in it. And the only thing you know about this character is like a symbol that's on the box. You're not supposed to know really anything about it. I think they maybe give you like a class name, which could be totally meaningless, such as Void Warden, which is one of the characters in the expansion. But anyway, so you have this box, and that box is basically like your entire character stats. There's not like a story element with the character besides kind of like, here's like the background of the race that you are. And then each of your abilities is given by a card. So as you're leveling up, you're getting new cards to choose from that give you abilities for what you can do during the game. And then, so you go into each scenario with like choosing some of the cards that you're going to do. And these are all like weapon or combat-based abilities. So the story concept is that like you're a group of adventurers off to do things, but that's all I can tell you about the original Gloomhaven because I didn't play it a lot. This is when I was still in Chicago. One of Gabe's friends got in, and so we tried it, and it was just like, wow, this is really, really difficult. And we were just kind of like doing combat stuff. But my husband got a gift of Jaws of the Lion last year, which is technically an expansion, but works as a standalone. So it's a smaller box, smaller game, and it's streamlined a lot of the stuff that Gloomhaven had done. But if you tell me how did it streamline it, I cannot remember. Just so that the gameplay feels much more streamlined. So in this one, you're a group of mercenaries and you're coming towards the city to like rest between an adventure and like look for new jobs. But when you get there, you find that like someone is doing some sort of fleshy experiments. And by that, I mean, there'll be like sentient pieces of flesh that you fight. But we haven't gotten far enough into the story to know, you know, where else this is going besides that this seems to be an indictment against researchers, which as a former biological researcher, I'm like, okay, I'm about it. But it's really, really hard, so we keep dying. Even when we make it easier, we keep dying. But the thing that I really am enjoying about this game is that it takes out what I feel like is a lot of the thoughts. So, you know, like the scenarios are pre-made. The story is minimal. Like, granted, I would definitely enjoy if there's more story, but I think as a kind of entry level, it's like, here is how a tabletop game can be played, of like an RPG, you know, like tabletop RPG kind of style game. I think it's helpful. And then like me, I think part of it is like, depends, right? I'll like store these kind of stuff depends on like the groups that you're with. And so I feel like I've probably put the most like flavor into my character because that's what I do. Mm-hmm. I'm like in our small group of people, despite all of us being, no, David's not an introvert, but like most of, you know, 3 out of 4 of us are introverts. But I am like the most outgoing, I guess, besides my best friend's husband. But anyway, so like I have kind of this story with my character kind of in my head, and I could like share it if I want to or whatever, but mostly we're just like trying to get through this fucking story. So we're just like, please, there needs to be something. But yeah, I guess that's like what it really appeals to me about it, is that it's just like, here, we've given you everything you need to do in order to go through in the story. Y'all just happen to be taking a long ass time going through the story, but it helps us kind of come in on like an even ground without like being like, okay, well now I have to write out this story, or like now I have to work on X, Y, or Z thing, which up until now feels like it's really been something that's limited kind of like my RPG experience, because it takes work, right? Like, you know, it takes to last year, like the longest campaign thing I've ever done is that my best friend ran a Dragon Age role-playing game, like a It was amazing. I loved it so much. And it was like fresh off of me playing all 3 games. And I was able to play an elf from Kirkwall, who's a mage, which is all I wanted to do. and we didn't get, I think we only have like 1 or 2 sessions left, but she had to work on it, you know? And so like we played, I think, 4 or 5 of the sessions, and it was amazing, and it was so much fun. But I really felt like so much of what happened in the game was like my character being like, all right, I guess I'm going to go do this, even though I'm the grumpiest from all of us, so why am I doing this? And then like across the table, Gabe would be sitting there being like, but what's my motivation? Like, why do I need to do this? I'm like, God damn it, like, please, you're not helping this. Like, so I think Gloomhaven does a nice job freeing you from some of that. Although, I'm hoping that like kind of as the story stuff picks up, because, you know, maybe we'll start getting better and not dying as much, then it'll lead some of that other aspects.
It's so interesting. I've not played Gloomhaven, and I also don't really know anything about it beyond that it exists. And I think it was rather expensive. Was that?
It's super expensive. Yeah.
Yeah. Board games cost so much money.
They really do.
I mean, like, I play D&D. Who the fuck am I to judge? I've got six books or whatever. So,
and they're all expensive books. They were like $45 when I was 14. I can't imagine they're cheaper now.
Nope, they're not. I usually try to buy them on sale. Like if I can find a used one, that's the best. Or if they're like on sale somewhere, I'll try to get a good deal. Or I ask for them as gifts rather than buying them outright, because they're so fucking expensive.
Yeah. And there's so many.
But I am very like, Gloomhaven sounds really interesting as something that it sounds to me, and this is totally just like based on what you said, I haven't played it at all, is you kind of get out of it what you put into it.
Does that sound accurate? Right. Yeah, I think so. And I'm curious to see if that's going to also continue, like the farther we actually get into the story. Because like I said, we have not gotten far. We keep dying.
So is the reason that you feel like it's a friendly starter? Again, I don't want to call it a tabletop RPG. I think that's hard for me. For me, Gloomhaven falls very firmly into the area of board game, but I understand how it's like how there is a blurred line, and it is in the blurry side of the line. Like, it's close enough to the line that it's in the blurry zone.
Is like a story board game a thing?
I think that's kind of what legacy games are typically.
Okay.
Like, because Gloomhaven is not the only one. There's also the game Pandemic, a game that I very much like, but simply do not want to play these days.
Yeah.
Fair.
Has a legacy version where you pretty much just play the board game a bunch of times, but that creates an arc for you by having played the game a bunch of times. Betrayal at House on the Hill.
This is the one I was thinking of.
Has a legacy game that I haven't played. But it's the similar idea, is you get your group of players together and you play the game multiple times over. I think with Betrayal, it's like a bunch of generations, which is sick as hell.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I love Betrayal.
I do too.
Yeah, I really love Betrayal. I want to get the legacy version, and I want to play Legacy Betrayal, which I think actually I should do.
Get it on the to-do list.
No, because I also really want to run games. Like I think that I would really enjoy GMing, but the cognitive load thing for me is so much. If I do not know every single bit of a game, I will panic and I will give up. So I play a lot of, I like facilitate a lot of story games and like GMless games, because I don't have to know all of the rules. And also, I tend to find the rules easier to understand, because there's not a lot of combat in GMless games. So there's not like a whole extra move set to learn. Anyway.
Grappling.
Betrayal takes that. Like, I know how to play Betrayal already. And so it would be extremely basic to get to a point where I could facilitate the legacy game. And I have more friends who I could coax into playing a board game with me than a tabletop role-playing game. Also, with TTRPGs, you like really need momentum. If you only play like 3 times a year, it's hard to remember what the hell is going on. But a board game like reminds you by default.
Yeah.
Our Pathfinder game we started 2 years ago. I think we've played 5 sessions.
Oh my god.
But it's difficult, right? To remember what the hell is happening? Yeah.
We had to reconstruct it from one of our characters wrote a detailed like report in character based on our first session. I had some half-hearted notes. The GM has the player has like all of the books, but not like where exactly we were and what exactly happened. So it's like part of the play experience for us is like, what are we doing
here? Yeah. Anyway, I guess Nassim, if you want to talk more about why you think, I know that I sort of answered my own question just now, but if you want to talk more about why you think that it's like a very good way to sort of pave the road into tabletop RPGs, I would love to hear more, because it's also the opposite of my experience in terms of training wheels for RPGs.
Yeah, I know. I think it really, you got to actually a lot of my own thoughts, which is that like, you don't need, like, you don't have to do a bunch of prep beforehand. You don't need to like learn all the kind of like all the things you need to know in order to like enter into a game. Because I even feel like as a player, if you're not familiar, like one of the, you know, I played Pathfinder twice, one of which was, you know, the 4 or 5 hours it took to build a character. Yeah. And coming into that, like, especially, you know, part of this was the problem was I was coming in as a new player to an already established game.
Oh boy.
Because somebody had left. And so like, that was, I think, a big part of the problem. But like, besides all of the kind of problems that come along with that, of like people knowing each other, having histories, like whatever, even just not knowing the world, it was a lot. It was really overwhelming to be sitting there for 4 hours trying to build a character. I mean, just kind of like, what stat is this? What stat is that? And it was fun. It was interesting, but it was also really overwhelming. So a lot of that kind of thought is taken out of it by someone being like, all right, here's like a pre-made character. You get to decide if you want to do kind of an actual character with a personality or like whatever, or if you're just going to play as, you know, kind of like, here's what I'm doing during combat. But that's already built in. The story is already given to you. You're just going through it kind of like the way that you know, ostensibly would in a visual novel or in a book. So, and then I think what Missy said earlier about like you getting in how much or getting out how much you put in is also really true of it. So if you want to be like, all right, I've got this personality for my two-horned axe thrower, which is who I play in Gloomhaven. The class name is Hatchet, and he goes by Hatchet, Hachete. Hachete is the most common one, as we have two Spanish speakers at our table, so that they are the ones that have named it. Yeah, no, it's just they have named him Hachete, but his name is Jean, so like, you know, he just like never goes by his name, but you know, however much you put into is good, and I think the game, because it's the one that's telling the story, can help hold your hand so that you feel like you're on the same page with everybody else. So at least for Gloomhaven, for me, that's what I really like about it. I'm curious, we also have King's Dilemma, which is a political, it's like, they call it like Game of Thrones, but in a board game, because it's like a political intrigue sort of thing where you're running a house. And we're going to do that after, eventually, whenever we finish Gloomhaven. So I'm really curious about how that's going to differ, because that's not in a like dungeon crawly-esque setting. Because at least for this is like dealing with kind of traditional fantasy tropes in a way that I'm like, okay, I don't have to like think about that aspect of it, even as they're specifically building out whatever this city is called. I don't have to, you know, I'm already kind of have a basic understanding of how this world works without being overwhelmed by specifics, if that makes sense.
I think now, again, I'm just talking out of my ass. But it kind of sounds like Gloomhaven is as an introductory kind of thing. It can kind of help you figure out what you like about these kinds of games.
Yeah.
Like, if you like do you like the character stuff? Do you like the mechanical stuff? It seems kind of like a little buffet of things to try out and find out what suits you best.
Yeah, I definitely hope as it goes on that the character stuff does pick up, because I am curious. There's 4 other boxes, theoretically one for each of our characters that we like can't open yet. So I'm really curious, like, do our characters evolve? Are they Pokemon? Like, what's going to happen here? So I would like a little bit more on that front, but at least like we know at the very least there are like side missions for each of our characters. We know because we have lost Gabe's characters. By this point, we've probably lost it 5 times and we're like, okay, we have to come back to this because we just keep losing. So I am curious about whether that the character stuff is a little lacking in that sense, but I'm hoping that it'll pick up because otherwise kind of like, you know, what are you being in, what are you investing in besides just the kind of repetitive nature of the battling, which is fun, incidentally, like not a bad repetitive because it's hard. If it was easier, maybe it would get boring, but it's super fucking hard. So yeah. But yes,
so I would agree with you. Interesting.
Cool. Yeah. I mean, do you want me to say some words about Apocalypse World? But
yeah, no, I don't know much about Apocalypse World.
Okay.
And so I would love to hear about it, especially because I think we all have different, like we're all kind of playing RPGs, but we're playing them in different ways. And so I'm really interested to hear about
that. So here's the thing about Apocalypse World for me.
Yeah.
Is Apocalypse World is the originator of the Powered by the Apocalypse like genre of tabletop role-playing games. You can see, so Apocalypse World happened and then Powered by the Apocalypse or Powered by the Apocalypse games happen. And the definition of Powered by the Apocalypse games is absolutely astounding. And I'm going to look it up. Hold on.
And Dungeon World is like a variation on Apocalypse World, right?
Yes. Dungeon World is what's called a hack of Apocalypse World in that, and which means it is also powered by the apocalypse. So a hack of a game typically means that the game uses pretty much all of the same core systems as the game it's a hack of. But it changes the flavoring and changes some of the mechanics to better fit that flavoring. So Apocalypse World is a 2d6 system, which means that when you roll, you roll 2d6. And if it's under a 6 or below, you fail. If it's a 7 to 9, you have a mixed success, which means you succeed, but there's some sort of consequence. And if you get a 10 plus, you succeed. Great. Good job. when you roll the dice, you roll 2 dice, you add them together, and then you add any modifiers. Dungeon World does that. That's how you win. The names of the stats, instead of being the names of the stats in Apocalypse World, which I can't list off the top of my head, I'm sorry, are the same as the stats in D&D, but they work differently than they work in D&D. And then Dungeon World also has a system of beliefs where each, a system of bonds where each character has a bond with each other character that informs how the players see their characters interacting, and then you resolve those bonds to get experience. And there's other tweaks, but there's like some fundamental differences. But ultimately, if you've played Apocalypse World, you pretty much know how to play Dungeon World. If you've played Dungeon World, you pretty much know how to play Apocalypse World. Powered by the Apocalypse games. Now give me 2 seconds to actually find this definition because it fucking rules. Okay, so here is Vincent Baker's definition for what Powered by the Apocalypse means. I should say that Apocalypse World is created by D. Vincent Baker and Megay Baker, 2 people. The Bakers are incredible. Vincent wrote this letter, so I'm reading Vincent's words. Here's the policy. If you've created a game inspired by Apocalypse World and would like to publish it, please do. If you're using our words, you need our permission per copyright law. If you're not using our words, you don't need our permission, although, of course, we'd love to hear from you. They're very kind people. They really would love to hear from you. They rule. instead, we consider it appropriate and sufficient for you to mention Apocalypse World in your thanks, notes, or credits section. It's completely up to you whether you call your game Powered by the Apocalypse. If you'd like to use our PBTA logo in your game's book design or trade dress, ask us and we'll grant permission for you to do so. This isn't a requirement of any sort. So basically, if you want to call your game Powered by the Apocalypse, you can.
That's awesome.
And it's really, really lovely. It's so open. And it's very representative of the fact that Apocalypse World kind of ushered in, not entirely on its own. It was part of a movement, but it's very much a game that a lot of people look at when they look at the beginning of this sort of generation of indie RPGs. It's like it was the beginning. Which means she's crunchy. I struggle with Apocalypse World because I love Powered by the Apocalypse games so much, but a lot of the things that Powered by the Apocalypse games do, if they're not essentially creating a new system wholesale, it's very funny. I've told the story on this podcast before, but Blades in the Dark, which is another really good game that has like ushered in a new family of RPGs, Forged in the Dark games, is a Powered by the Apocalypse game, but it's moved away from the 2d6 add them, you figure out how you win. In Blades in the Dark, you roll dice differently, and there's like some core differences in play that really change sort of the rhythm of the game. Anyway, Apocalypse World ushered in these Powered by the Apocalypse games, but the vast majority of them, or at least the vast majority of the ones that I've played and that I see talked about in the communities I'm in, a lot of what they've done to the system is to streamline it. Like, they've, in Powered by the Apocalypse games, so you roll the dice, and there's also moves, which I've described kind of like feats in D&D before, which is like, your character has a set of moves, which are things that your character can do that are special to your character. Every character can yell at another character. All of them. But sometimes specific character classes have like a move that means their particular yelling comes super with yell. It's, they can super yell. It comes with extras. And so rather than having spells or feats or skills in the way that D&D does or Pathfinder does, Powered by the Apocalypse has moves. And it's all moves. Apocalypse World has so many moves. It has like it has like 8 or more like standard moves that everyone needs to know. It has combat moves. It has vehicle combat moves. It has special moves. Oh, you thought you were done? Nope, there's another page of shit to read. Like, it has so many moves. I know what my character's moves are. I got it. I know what I want him to do. I cannot even begin to conceive of what I am supposed to roll and when it's not like his specific stuff. And Monster Hearts, the Powered by the Apocalypse game that I played for several years before this, has 3. It has turn someone on, shut someone down, and maybe it just has 2. But it only has like 5 moves total. So 40% of the moves are dialogue-based moves. They're like moves that you roll, or that your GM can tell you to roll when you've been sassing someone, which is my primary mode of play. Apocalypse World has 1, and it only sometimes applies. And so I'm having like the wildest time trying to adapt a playstyle that's incredibly talky and very based on like verbal sparring with my GM into a system that is simply not interested in verbal sparring and much more interested in the kind of sparring that involves stabbing. So it's wild, and it's very complicated stabbing. So this is the first time in many, many, many years that I'm playing a game that actually is much more like D&D in that there's 2 modes of play. There's play, like story play and combat play. And it's fiction first, which is like the most important thing in any given time in Apocalypse World, is the fiction. But you definitely have to switch your brain from running around the ship. We were playing a game that's like Waterworld inspired. Don't worry about it. running around the ship to, oh, you know, I got to hunker down and try not to get shot. Like, these are different concepts. Whereas in Monster Hearts, it was all sort of the same vibe. We entered combat, I think, once. There was a lot of fighting in that game. A lot of punching happened, but there was like one time where we were like, this is combat. All the other times, it's like, oh god, someone's shooting at me. What do we do? And I mostly just insulted them until they got time to run away.
It's very interesting. It kind of sounds to me like there's a prioritization, like a difference in prioritization of what's happening. Like in D&D, I think that even as a person who plays a lot of D&D and really loves D&D, I think that there is a prioritization of combat.
Oh, yeah.
Over everything else. Yeah. There's so many fucking combat rules. Now, I happen to like it that way and I'm cool with it. But like the game is telling me through the rules that exist in it that combat is what we're here to do. Now, when I actually play D&D, combat's like 10 to 30% of a play session. Like, we just don't do that much of it. But that's just how we play. Whereas it sounds like, and now it sounds like Apocalypse World, in, as you said, being like kind of the genesis of this whole new spin on tabletop RPGs with the 2D6 system. You mentioned that it's a bit crunchier than, say, so Monster Hearts. but it sounds to me as though Apocalypse World is prioritized, even in being more crunchy and having more combat rules, it's still prioritizing the story element over the crunchy combat. Is that accurate?
I think that it says it's prioritizing the story element. But in my experience of trying to play it, I think so. Apocalypse World, and you advance in Apocalypse World by changing your by growing your relationships with other characters. You have a relationship stat with each other character, and when it hits either +4 or -3, it goes back to 0 or 1, depending which direction it went. And you gain an experience point. So you get some experience. It takes 6 experience to level. You get some experience that way, but not very much. You're supposed to get experience by rolling, and you're supposed to, and you get, you every time you roll a highlighted stat, you mark experience. We've played 6 sessions. And I think I have 3 total experience.
Wow.
Which is not much. it's slow going. Because we haven't figured out how to play such that we're rolling. And the game doesn't give you a lot to roll unless you're in charged adversarial situations with NPCs. And we've mostly doing a character drama, which is what Monster Hearts is designed for. And so, yeah, Apocalypse World, like, does emphasize, like, the mechanics of the game do emphasize the fiction and do emphasize story more than D&D's literal written rules do. But I think that I'm specifically wrong about how much Apocalypse World itself emphasizes story, because I have played such story focused Powered by the Apocalypse games. And so it's been an adjustment. and literally today, just now, I'm really like internalizing the truth of that. And so I think my group needs to like sit down and have a conversation about how we're telling stories and how we should think about like adapting our storytelling or our expectations to better fit Apocalypse World, or adjusting Apocalypse World to better fit what we're doing. Anyway, it's a cool game. It's just a different one.
I love tabletop RPGs. They all sound so fun to me.
They're very good. They're very good.
I'm like, I want to play. There's so many that I want to play that I just haven't had the opportunity to.
If somebody else organizes it, I will run something for side quest people. I'll do it.
Hell,
I just need somebody else to tell me when to show up.
Oh, I can handle planning.
I'm so bad at planning. And that's another thing. That's another reason I can't GM, is because I'm so tired of scheduling. My whole job is getting on people to give me shit when I need it. I do it 40 hours a week. I'm so tired.
I am the planner for D&D.
Phenomenal.
In that I create the doodle and I hound everybody until they put their schedules in there.
Yes. This is my open invitation, request, question mark, offer. I can't necessarily GM, but I will happily facilitate any sort of indie doodad.
Can you facilitate for y'all. Monster Hearts?
I would.
It's not a GM-less game, but I can try my best.
Okay. If not, I will look into other things. Monster Hearts is like one of the top ones I've wanted to play forever.
Yeah, Monster Hearts is hard because it is GM'd, which means it requires me to prep more, which I'm really bad at. And Monster Hearts is especially hard to run a one-shot of because it is a campaign-oriented game. For me, again, lots of people run Monster Hearts one-shots all the time. I'm just, aware of my limitations.
Got you.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I do for sure want to play The Quiet Year.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I can literally run The Quiet Year in 5 minutes. Not today. I have to go to Petco.
I'm super busy today. I did a podcast yesterday. I did Pathfinder yesterday. I got a podcast today. Busy. But yes, I would be happy to set to at least do the planning stage. And also, Nassim, if you ever do want to play D&D, I will run you a short adventure.
Yeah.
And walk you through the process of character creation, hopefully in a way that's fun.
Cool. I dig it.
So I also had the last will and testament of Gideon Blythe.
Oh my god!
Should I talk about that or save it?
I think you should save it.
Okay, I'm only midway through chapter two, so there's still a lot of game to play that I can talk about another time. Is there anything else we want to talk about with regard to tabletop games? I like them.
I think that's pretty groovy.
Yeah,
specifically groovy.
Pretty groovy. Yeah. There's so many, and you would think that they would be very similar, but they're not. And I think that's very cool. Hot spicy takes from me. I think my number one, I really want to play Monster Hearts. I really want to play Bluebeard's Bride. And very intrigued by...
You really want to play games that are designed to make you cry.
Yeah, I love that shit. Love it. Love it. Also really want to play Blades in the Dark.
Also designed to make you cry.
Yeah, same.
Yes.
Different cry. Not the same cry.
Yeah. I love them. I like how interesting just rolling dice can be.
Yeah.
That's my spicy take. yeah. Anything else to add from anybody?
No, that's it for me. I mean, I have infinite things to say about tabletop RPGs, but I think I'm done today.
We'll save some for next time. So that'll do it for this episode. That's what we've been playing, Tabletop Edition. That wasn't even everything.
No.
I didn't talk about One Night Ultimate Werewolf.
I chose not to talk about Field Guide to Memory. Not Field Guide to Memory. I'm so sorry. What's the one with the map? Holy shit.
Amending,
because we've talked about Amending so much.
did you find some objects?
Oh, I sure did.
Oh yeah, there's
several
excited.
Actual bones attached to my
yes!
map.
Yes, yes, good. I love that. Great. I love that. So yeah, tabletop games, pretty rad. Thanks for joining us today. You can find us out on the internet at sidequest.zone. That's where our website is. If you are listening to this, you definitely know that already. You can find me on the internet at Melissa Brinks on Twitter, where I only tweet about music now.
It's good. It's wholesome. Oh,
thank you.
You can find me at Twitter and Instagram at JamsterNazzy. And theoretically, like I keep saying, I'm going to be doing book promo stuff, but the person at my publisher told me to slow down, and I was like, rude. How dare you? So, we'll see.
Yeah, you can find me at ZH Gilbert on Twitter, very carefully trying to stay out of the wholesome discourse and then stumbling right on into it. Not on Twitter at all, just in my personal life and my own heart. You can also probably not find me tweeting about Haikyuu, but I am reading it. And I did misspell it as haiku because I tweeted as I was falling asleep and
Very
didn't
cute.
Proofread.
I love haiku. Oh, that's funny. Thank you to Alexander Nakarada for the use of our theme song, Bass Thee, used under a Creative Commons Zero license. Pretty rad of you. Thanks. You want to plug the Discord?
Yeah, we have it. Go there.
We sure do. We have it. It's kind of quiet, but I like that.
It's nice it's nice to be among friends in silence.
Yeah, for real. Like sometimes I'm in a Discord and I'm like, whoa, everybody slow the fuck down. Cool it. It's time to take a rest. In our Discord, I'm like, yes.
A college club I was in, the linguistics club, not a big populated club when I was in school, just started a Discord because everybody is like, we can't be doing this on Facebook anymore. Nobody's here. And also, it's terrible. And it's hopping. I did not anticipate this Discord to be hopping.
The linguistics Discord is just popping off.
It's popping off. Those kids have things to say.
I love that. Our Discord is a little more chill than the Linguistics Club Discord. But we welcome you to join us there. Now I would like to advise you all to go take a nap. So I'm the expert. I don't remember last time I took a nap, but you should take one.
Naps are good.
Naps are good.